Final hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. Chase will be back in the saddle with us tomorrow, hopefully. Chase, just let you know we're still thinking about you, man. Hang in there. Elijah Campbell has been manning things at our game studio board, and so we should be heading over to West End just a moment to talk with Clark Lee as Vanderbilt will be hosting Georgia this week. We'll have Mitch Light following the head coach. And Georgia, boy, we talked about it with Paul Feinbaum. Willie, their defense, this just in, it is really,
really
freaking good.
Scary good, and that is going what a bar that is set, you know, for Vanderbilt and where they're trying to get and where they're coming from. Winless last year. I saw their game against Stanford. It was a, you know, there were some things that were encouraging there. And then, of course, they had a rough last minute 53 where they just pretty much gave the game away. And to their credit, they kept battling in the second half. The worst news coming out of that game is Raymond Davis, a good, solid tailback who we were asking Coach Lee about last week. Mm-hmm. He was having some really good success in that first half, and he hurt himself, and he is now out for the season. Just tough. You know, a transfer coming in, he's got a great opportunity, and now his season is over. Hopefully he will be able to come back. I don't know what the rules are. Only three games. I don't know how much eligibility he has, but I like the way he carries himself too. He was becoming kind of a team spokesman. If you go to the stadium, he's on a lot of the video boards. I like how he delivers things. Team guy. So that's a tough blow at a position where they're not really deep. Now the other kid, Rocco, he had some great runs too. So he's got a huge opportunity now. So we'll see how much of the workload that he can shoulder.
Yeah.
But now you just got to survive this game against Georgia, and then you've got UConn the following week, and then you've got a lot of these teams like Missouri, Kentucky, South Carolina, Tennessee. Can you stack up against those teams? But these are all questions for down the road. But we've got Coach Lee on the line. So, Darren, get it going.
All right. Yeah, let's head over to West End. Let's bring in Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee. He is indeed on the line with us. Coach, thanks for joining us as always. You know, brought up after week one, the coaches always say, we know we've talked to enough of them over the years, that they learn the most about their team from weeks one to two. Well, we know what you learned about your team from week one to week two. So now I'm going to ask you, what have you learned about your team now that you're through three games?
Well, I think we have a good team when we play complementary football and when we play to our identity. And I think part of that identity is you know, being ready to play, you know, being ready before we begin. So being able to start fast, it's sustaining through the middle, and it's finishing strong. And I just don't want to sound like I'm just throwing out cliches to you, but I feel like in the East Tennessee State game, we weren't ready for the competitive moment. We wanted them to cooperate with us and felt like we were entitled to an outcome because of our work. And Colorado State game, you know, we were able to string together a really strong middle eight and finish the right way, but we didn't start fast. Stanford, you know, obviously defensively we started slow, but offensively we found some rhythm there early, and then weren't able to play complementary football right before the half, and we got into a 13-point hole. And I thought that, you know, we were competitive through the finish, but never quite rediscovered that rhythm that we had early. And so, you know, we have a good team, but we have a team that's still in the infancy of a change in program. And so finding consistency, finding the toughness required to sustain, you know, output and performance over four quarters will be critical for us reaching our potential as a team.
Yeah, I thought you hit on some really key points there. That's exactly where I was going next. Thought your defense certainly had their struggles in the first half, but I loved the counterpunch. Every time Stanford would score, you guys would have the nice counterpunch, and I thought it was a nice back-and-forth affair in the first half. Unfortunately, right before the half, I thought those final 2 minutes were didn't go your way. There was some key moments that really dictated and changed the complexion of the game, in my opinion. So when you were in that spot and you go into the half because of that, with that being said, what did you tell your team to get them ready for the second half because of that, the way it finished?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think even in the phrase, like, things didn't go our way, I mean, I want this team to understand the level of control we do have over our performance. We don't control the outcome, but listen, when you make a goal line stop at the two, you turn around and you go, I think, like, over 7 minutes and 98 yards and puncture with a touchdown to tie it, your kickoff team takes the field with a point to prove. And that is a moment that, you know, we have to seize. And we have to, first of all, do the little things right. Let's be on sides. And second of all, you know, we need to cover that kick. We need to tackle it inside the 20. We need to be celebrating in the end zone. And we need to grab the momentum of the game and just pull it into our favor. You know, what an unbelievable missed opportunity. And that was the starting point. I think at the end of that sequence, they started around midfield and they finished with a field goal. And so even then, you know, we go back on offense, and in my mind, it's like, here comes a 2 minute drive to score. This is like 2 minute and a half against Colorado State. Let's go. And, you know, we go 2nd and 8, drop a slant that puts us in 3rd and 8. We throw an interception, and we made a bad decision with the football. And so that there's a touchdown. And then we come back out on offense and we're trying to bleed the clock, and Stanford smartly forces us to punt and we don't cover it. And there's another penalty in that one too. And all that to say is, like, listen, there is so much in the outcome that we don't control, but my goodness, as a team, we have to grab that moment and seize it and turn the tides in our favor there. And so at halftime, it was just the recognition of, look, that didn't go how we wanted it at the end. There's a lot to build on positive from that first half. Let's take it into the second half and go play the level of football that we know we can play. We start the second half with a counter play that is one block away from being a gasher. And again, being one block away is a formula for losing. We have to find that play. We have to make that block and spring the run so that we can get right back into the rhythm that we had in the first half. And so I know that I'm being long-winded with it, but ultimately, these are the experiences that expose to our team and to our program what it takes to win at a high level, how we have to play to put away a good opponent. And there should be evidence there to all of us that we're capable of it. Now let's seize control over the things that we have control over, and let's find out how good we can be.
I'll tell you this, Coach, when Ramon Davis in the first half had that spin move on that run, I about came out of my shoes. I mean, that was an incredible run. Then you get the tough news, because he was banged up, he came back, and then you get the tough news that he's lost for the season. How does that affect what you guys do moving forward?
Well, let me start by saying that spin move was on a counter play, and it's the same play that we had designed in the second half. And it goes to show, when we make the blocks, we have the holes. And now Ray has a special ability at the third level there to make the safeties miss. You know, look, I've got so much respect for Ray. I think he's been such a bright spot for us early in the season. And what I know about him is he's been battling little nicks and bruises and bumps throughout, you know, his time here. And so, you know, I'm sorry for him. I'm disappointed for him. I'm excited, though, for him to be able to continue to bring his wisdom and his spirit into this program every day as he recovers, because the running back room is going to need that from him. And I'm anxious for him to get healthy so that he can put on display all that he's capable of, because he's a really talented player. He's a talented person. And, you know, we have guys that will be ready to step up. That's, you know, Rocco, who certainly had a nice outing against Stanford and room to grow there. You have Patrick Smith, who has played for us and at times shown some explosive athleticism. And then Jay Sigler will also be a a part of that equation too. And so we, you know, we'll be, obviously behind those guys as they look to fill the hole that Ray leaves with his injury.
Talking to Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head football coach. And Clark, I had not really noticed a whole lot about Rocco Griffin before that game, but boy, he really impressed me. He and Raymond were looking like a really good tandem. And as you mentioned a couple times, you guys ran the ball really successfully, and that's only going to open up things more to where I think where people are looking for a lot of production with the wide receivers and Ken Seals. But tell us about Rocco Griffin's story. What's his background?
Well, Rocco is from South Georgia. He's this is his second year at the program. Rocco was a guy who made an impression on me in the early goings when I got here, as far as his spirit, enthusiasm, work ethic. His habits are way ahead of his success on the field. Here's a guy who didn't carry the ball in the first game of the season for us, and truthfully could have made an argument for the fact that he had had a good fall camp, and he had been hurt a little bit early in fall camp, but, you know, I mean, he's just never changed. You know, he's every day the same guy. He comes to work. He loves football. He loves his teammates. He seized opportunity against Colorado State, made some nice runs there, and when his number was called against Stanford, he was prepared, and he's prepared because, again, he's got a level of consistency in his approach that we should all strive for. And so I'm really proud of Rocco. I think he's a guy that, everyone should be pulling for, and is representative of what this program, what Vanderbilt football is about. It's a guy that's tough, that battles adversity, that knows who he is, that, you know, plays for his teammates and is having success through, you know, a consistent approach.
All right, Coach, I'm going to show you my loyalty. I did stay all the way to the bitter end. And so I watched Mike Wright, the game, it's insignificant in some ways, but it was pretty noticeable. Mike Wright had a nice drive there at the end. You guys score a touchdown on the very last play of the game. But I know one of the things that you've said about Mike is you love his makeup. And, of course, he gives you a different look. You can't help but notice when he's running, he has the ability. He's faster than a lot of guys on the field. How tough is it to weave him in there or try to utilize what his skill set is to complement what you've got in Ken Seals?
Well, it's a challenge, but that's why we're here. We have to do a better job of getting him in the game earlier, and we can't. It's not something we can wait to do. And I think on Saturday it was a situation where we had rhythm on offense early. We kind of lost that heading into half. And then, in the second half, you kept trying to reignite what you had going for you in the first half. The red zone drive that we had in the second half stalled out because of penalty. Again, we can't have that level of self-sabotage. There was some positive traction there. And we had chances to flip the field, but through penalty or, poor coverage, we weren't able to do that. When it comes to playing two quarterbacks, it's hard to have someone, watching for three quarters and then insert them into the game. I don't think that's fair to anybody. And so our challenge is getting Mike involved early so that he can get in rhythm and in sync with the game so that we can use the skills that he has to be explosive on offense. And he's earned that. I mean, And Mike believes in himself, and he wants to compete for that opportunity too. So that's our offensive staff's challenge, and my challenge is to find a way to introduce him early in the game so that both we can be explosive early and use his skills to benefit us early, but also so that he can be prepared as the game extends to continue being involved and help us win games.
I know it was probably a little disappointing that the offense couldn't keep it going in that second half, but on the other side, your defense that really was struggling in that first half, they did start coming up with some good stops. Was that a good sign for you that they didn't wilt? Because at one point you're thinking, boy, are they ever going to get a stop here?
Yeah, I know these guys too well to know that they're not going to wilt. I mean, I think we had to challenge them on the sideline. We had to place expectations on playing a certain style of defense. And the issue goes back to how we started here is, you know, if we can't play complementary football, then we're going to be, we're giving the power to our opponents, saying, you know, hopefully they're not playing well or they're not synced up, and gives us a chance to stay in the game. When we do play complementary football, we can be a really good team. And so what we need is for the defense to start fast. You know, we need more intentional pursuit. We need to swarm the football. We need to play within structure. When we do that, we've demonstrated the fact that we can make stops. And when we don't, we leave it to chance. And so it's, again, a consistency thing. It's not a – I mean, I obviously believe in those guys. I know they can do it. They're capable of it. You know, how do we pull them forward so that they're ready before we begin, and they're sustaining that level of performance through the middle of the game into the finish? And once we do that, you know, we're gonna put ourselves in really good position to finish games out.
Last thing for you, and of course, everything's going to continue to get ratcheted up as you start getting into league play here. But as a first-year head coach, I noticed there's a couple times in the game you've got these really tough calls. One thing we see a lot of is the trend is if it's a short yardage situation, you get up on the ball quick and you run a play quick, and it seems to work a lot. But there was a couple of times where you were faced with, do we run up on the ball and run the play, or do we maybe wait and see if there was a bad spot on the play before, which I thought you had a case. There was one case where it was whether the guy was in the end zone or not.
Morocco.
Yeah, so how tough is that as a coach to know, you know, when to push it and keep the tempo going, or when to say, you know what, I think we might have seen something there, and if we wait a minute, maybe the replay challenge will happen.
Well, it's the balance, right? It's like I think the more information we have on the play, the more we can make a calculated response. In terms of the replay, you know, challenge, the less information we have, the more that you're trusting your team to go make the next play. And I think on that one in particular, that was a second down snap that led to a third and one that we got. I believe we ran a quarterback sneak and got stymied, and then a fourth and one that we hand the ball to Ray and he spun into the end zone for a touchdown. So, again, those are things where, you know, I'm looking for information in the moment as much as I can get. But we also, you know, look, when you have 1 yard to go, for us, those are what we say here is that, you know, that's 100% conversion. So I don't want to hold back. I want to put faith in that offense to get the necessary yards to score. And me, you know, playing the game of, you know, is almost being fearful of whether or not we can score, and rather lead with the belief that we will. Obviously, if Rocco, you know, we have the information that Rocco was in and it was definitive, you know, we'd love the thought to end that series a little earlier. But for me, it's about faith and confidence in what we're going to do, and that's the place from which I need to lead.
Good stuff. And you're processing this in a real short amount of time. So, hey, thanks a lot for coming on with us as always, Coach, and good luck against the Bulldogs coming up on Saturday.
I appreciate that, and I appreciate being with you, and look forward to talking to you next week.
All right. Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head football coach. They've got the Georgia Bulldogs coming in. Needless to say, a big challenge for them there. As we move forward, we're going to talk to Mitch Light coming up on the other side. We'll talk some college football with him. I'm going to tell you the latest from Smashville. Now, the rookie tournament is over. The Predators won the last game. They got an overtime winner today against the Florida Panthers with a Tommy Novak OT winner. So the rookies go 1-2. The regular training camp gets going tomorrow. There are preseason games this weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. The doubleheader. Remember the doubleheader? It's back. There were no preseason games last year. We got the doubleheader back this weekend. That'll be fun. But also remember that the outdoor game. Yesterday you heard me emphasize the first month of the schedule. There's 6 games in October in Smashville. Isn't that nice? But remember, in February, the Outdoor Classic is coming in, the Stadium Series, if you will, against the Tampa Bay Lightning. There's only one way you can guarantee that you can get a seat, and that place is going to be rocking that day, and that is to become a member of the Loyal Legion, a partial or full season ticket holder. To get a hold of the Predators, it's very simple. Just go to NashvillePredators.com/tickets and say, I want to go to that Stadium Series game and I want to get in on the Loyal Legion. So many great benefits for you. You're going to enjoy it. Once again, NashvillePredators.com/tickets. And for single game tickets, they are on sale right now, and they are exclusively at Ticketmaster.com. We'll see you in Smashville.
All right, let's do a little light after Lee here on Darren Donick and Chase. We just spoke with Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach. Now let's speak with Mitch Light from The Athletic. We'll keep this college football theme rolling right along here on this rainy Tuesday. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good, Darren. Hope you're well.
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about Vanderbilt's next opponent in this Georgia team. We know they're on defense. They're ferocious. It was a sight to see how they swallowed up Clemson early on. You know, looking at their schedule, you've of course got the big game in Jacksonville, the big outdoor cocktail party. But really, outside of that, at Auburn is really it. I mean, it looks like it's set up, and I know it's a dangerous game. It's, you know, they've played, what, three games. It's dangerous to go on and give them chalk up all these wins. But it certainly does look like, when you see the way they're equipped, barring any catastrophe with just injury after injury after injury to major players, it's set up for them to go to Atlanta undefeated. Is that fair to say?
It's a favorable schedule by SEC standards, or, you know, I think some Big Ten fans would argue by Big Ten standards as well. Big Ten's, especially the East, is looking pretty good right now. But you look at some of the games that could potentially trip them up in their home. You know, Arkansas, we'll find out a little bit more about Arkansas this week when they leave Fayetteville. It's a neutral site game against Texas A&M. But they get Arkansas at home, and they get Kentucky at home. They get Missouri at home. Now, you mentioned the Auburn game. Obviously, that's not going to be easy, and they get Florida at a neutral site. But, like, had they forced to go to Kentucky or maybe Arkansas, you'd say, okay, that could trip them up. But I'm with you. They are looking looking pretty good right now. Just a convincing take-care-of-business win against South Carolina on Saturday night. And there's a lot to like about this team. And I'm sure you guys saw the Shane Beamer quote. When he was asked about the game, why the Georgia defense is so good, and he's just like, dude, look at their roster. I mean, they've got five stars all over the place. It was refreshing to hear him talk like that. And he was probably, you know, in the heat of the moment, he just watched his team play against all those five stars, so he probably realized what the talent gap there was, but that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that was a funny quote. Right, he just said what we say out loud all the time. You just rarely hear coaches say it, so that was refreshing. What did you make of the Auburn game at Penn State? That was a fun game to watch Saturday night. Of course, Penn State came away with the 8-point victory, but what did you make of the game as a whole?
Yeah, great game. Everything about it was great. Just as college football fans, like seeing teams that you don't see play. I mean, I guess those teams have played in the bowl game in the past, but that's not a normal matchup. I thought Penn State made a statement for the second time this year. You know, they go to Wisconsin, their defense is on the field for 96 plays in that game, and they hold Wisconsin, I believe, to one touchdown. I thought Sean Clifford, who's been, you know, not a lot of, I'm sure people in Penn State are talking about it, but everyone's like kind of falling in love with, well, maybe before this weekend, but Will Levis at Kentucky, yep. You know, the Penn State transfer. And if Levis had a great year at Kentucky's new offense and Sean Clifford struggled, a lot of people would be putting heat on that staff for choosing the wrong guy. Which Clifford, I don't have the stats in front of me. It was like 20, only a few incompletions against a good Auburn defense. And, you know, Dotson, the wide receiver, was outstanding. Just a really important win for James Franklin in the Big Ten. Not a terrible loss for Auburn. I don't think, you know, I'm sure Auburn fans would beg to differ, but I don't think anyone's expecting this Auburn team to, you know, win the West or be a playoff team. So there's no shame in going up to Penn State and losing that game. But I thought it was just kind of another statement by Penn State. And look at the Big Ten East. You know, Michigan State's 3-0 with a win over at Miami. They've looked good. Obviously, Michigan's looked good so far. Ohio State hasn't looked great there. So I'm really intrigued by what's going on with Big Ten East.
Yeah, I was going to say, so what do you make of this Penn State team? Now, we're going to learn a lot about them because they've got to go to Iowa. They've got to go to the Shoe in Columbus and take on Ohio State. They're at Maryland. They've got Michigan at home, at Michigan State. So we're going to learn a lot about them. But, I mean, right now what you've seen, how good do you really think they are?
I think they're playoff good. If that's the real Sean Clifford, if they can get that, you know, type of production, and I'm clicking through, I think, to find out his numbers. Yeah, it was 28 for 32. He is completing 71% of his passes, only four touchdowns, but in one interception this year, and averaging 8.1 yards per attempt. That is a very good yards per attempt on a high completion rate like that. Sometimes when you see completion rates up over 70%, it's a lot of dinking and dunking, but when you're averaging 8.1 yards per pass attempt, that means you're throwing the ball downfield, making some big plays there. The defense is good. It's been good under Brent Pry. You know, going back, Brent Pry is now the only on-field assistant who is still with James Franklin from year one at Vanderbilt. So he has been with them through it all. So, yeah, I like this Penn State team. And you know, if you throw out that 0-4 start last year, that throughout the weird 2020 season, James Franklin's done a great job at Penn State, and that's why he's being mentioned by so many people as a potential head coach at USC.
Yeah, which is interesting. By the way, USC got down 14-0 and came back, and I think, 42 unanswered to beat Washington State. LSU, Mississippi State, that's how they started off last year. Of course, we know there was no out-of-conference games, and I remember that game. It was a crazy game in Baton Rouge as Mississippi State came away with the victory. This year it's in Starkville. Mississippi State's coming off the stinging loss. LSU, we already know they've got their hiccup at UCLA. By the way, how about UCLA's gag over the weekend? How do you see LSU-Mississippi State playing out?
You know, Mississippi State's very close both ways. I mean, you could argue they should have won that game against Memphis, and, you know, the weird call at the end of the game. But they almost lost in week one to Louisiana Tech. They were down, 20 points in the fourth quarter, and they scored the last three possessions to win 35-34. And they had a very under-the-radar dominating win over NC State. I don't think the offense looked great, but 24-10 over, I think, a pretty good NC State team. We don't know yet, so probably a better defensive Mississippi State team than some expected. If you're LSU, I think that you've kind of had this game circled. You know, this is what set the tone last year for that miserable season for LSU. They looked like they had never seen or never even watched film of a Mike Leach offensive team. And the bad thing was, is usually it takes a while for Mike Leach's offense to get going. That was the highlight of the season offensively for Mississippi State in week one. So, you know, I'd expect LSU to go in there and win this game, but this LSU team, it's far from, you know, a complete team. They've had some key injuries on both sides of the ball. John Emery, the running back they expected to have, the former five-star, was expected to be their number one running back, academically ineligible. So there's still some drama going on there. So this is sort of like an intriguing early season barometer game, even though both teams have already played big games. You know, we saw LSU at UCLA. So I think it's a very important game for LSU.
Are you buying Michigan's start, or is it just beating up on some teams they're supposed to beat up on?
I'm buying it. You know, it's a little bit of both. They made Washington look bad. Now, Washington has not looked good, although they, you know, keep doing the transitive law here. They just pounded Arkansas State, and they shut them down. Arkansas State has been a very good offensive team so far. But Michigan's kind of found their identity. They really, really run the ball well. And, again, they haven't left home. Western, you know, they beat Western Michigan 47-14. Western Michigan beat Pitt last week. We all know Pitt won at Tennessee. You know, Northern Illinois, they beat them 63-10. Northern Illinois won at Georgia Tech. It's not a great Northern Illinois team, so you can look at it like that. And you know, they got another one at home against Rutgers, and then they go to Wisconsin. But you know, look at their schedule. They go to Wisconsin. They go to Michigan State. All their difficult games before Penn State are on the road. Before Ohio State are on the road. So you know, I hope they keep it up. No dog in the hunt. I just kind of like when Michigan's good at football. I think it's fun. I think Jim Harbaugh's good for college football. I know he annoys a lot of people. And he's another guy. Like, I'll defend James Franklin. I'll defend Jim Harbaugh. People group him, like, with the Scott Frost, you know, as far as hires that haven't quite worked out. But go to Wikipedia. Look at Jim Harbaugh's record. He's won 10 games, I think, four of the last five complete seasons, you know, taken away from not including last season. So I know there's been some weirdness and some hiccups there, but I think this is a pretty good Michigan team.
Talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic, one of their college football editors. And Mitch, one of the things that I know you emphasized during your week and coverage of the game is the recruiting beat. And the question was asked in a mailbag in one of the interviews, or sorry, one of the articles in The Athletic. How would Deion Sanders recruit at USC? I hadn't thought about it, but I also thought this, with Florida State struggling, his alma mater, what do you think about him down the road there? I never would have thought that talk
is already in play.
Yeah, like, so just tell me, do you think Deion, you know, has eyes on this right now? So, you know, going to the next step.
I can't imagine he would not want to be the head coach of Florida State, his alma mater. And, yeah, you were referencing Ari Wasserman's recruiting mailbag today where someone had asked that because Reggie Bush, I believe it was, threw out Deion's name. And, you know, no doubt Deion would recruit incredibly well wherever he went. The thing is, you know, proving that you can run a program, proving you can be the CEO of a head coach. So I think if he is the coach at Jackson State for 3 or 4 years and they look like a well-coached team and organized team and all that stuff, I think he definitely becomes a candidate for a bigger job if he wants to go that route. Right now, I would be a little hesitant. That's why, you know.
You want to see it for longer.
Yeah. I mean, I know you're talking about Florida State, but if you're USC, you know, someone like James Franklin, who's been a head coach for, you know, what, 9, 10 years, and there's a lot more established candidates, but he's definitely intriguing. I think a lot of it, when we hear his name, we kind of scoff just because of Deion and all that. But, you know, he had by far the best recruiting class for an FCS school that we've seen. Ever this past year. So attracting talent would not be an issue for Deion Sanders wherever he was head coach.
We are, I guess, longing for some new blood, more contenders to spice things up. You know, we've talked a lot about, you know, what does Florida's, you know, their effort against Alabama mean. I'm also watching out west. Like, I'm thinking, can somebody put together a really good year? Maybe it's Oregon. I watched a lot of the BYU game. I got back from the Vanderbilt-Stanford game. I flip on BYU-Arizona State. Arizona State, I thought, goofed up an opportunity to maybe blow by them there in the second half. But BYU's putting together a pretty good year. But tell me, who should I be watching for some new blood?
Yeah, well, BYU's 3-0 against the Pac-12 South. And that's a surprise, you know, beating Arizona, Utah, and Arizona State. Then they get South Florida, Utah State. They'll be 5-0 when they play Boise State. So that is, you know, losing Zach Wilson. That's a big, you know, not many people expected that. You know, the boring answer is Oregon because they won at Ohio State. But I think I don't know who has emerged yet as that new blood. But I think the positive sign for us that want to see some new blood and don't like the same teams every year is the fact that. Some of the top teams that we just chalked up as foregone conclusions have shown some signs of weakness. Like Clemson offensively has been, you know, they've really struggled. Oklahoma has not looked great this year, you know. So Florida is one of those teams to me. They're so intriguing because Dan Mullen keeps proving what a good coach he is. And this was another question in that recruiting mailbag we did today. He's just not recruiting at a level right now where he's going to have a roster that's close in talent to Georgia and Alabama and soon what Texas A&M is doing. You know, they've only got one top 100 player signed for next year. Now they're involved with some other guys, and Dan Mullen is proving that he can coach them up, and maybe he doesn't need that roster, but it's just been kind of proven over time to have sustained success at a national elite level. You need a more talented roster than what Florida has right now. So that to me, it's weird to call Florida a sleeping giant because it's a program that's won 2 national championships under 2 different coaches in the last, 15 years. But if Dan Mullen could somehow not notch up that recruiting just a little bit, I really think that that's a team that could be a consistent playoff team because I'm just a big believer in his coaching.
I know people are aware of this, but it's so amazing. You talk to any coach behind the scenes, kind of off the record, whether you're talking about football, basketball, baseball, and they will all have some things to say in terms of what they're seeing with the transfer rule on top of the COVID thing. Like, if you're a senior in high school right now, you know, you got a lot to deal with, especially. Now, you know, as each year goes by, it'll probably shake out more, but what are you hearing, Mitch? What trends are you seeing, especially for this upcoming recruiting class? It came to light, you know, one of the things we talked about earlier, in the week was Ty Chandler, Eric Gray. You see them, they're having big games right away for their new teams. Henry To'o To'o is playing a lot for Alabama. This is just a new world here, and that it affects the especially the high school seniors this year.
Yeah, well, one thing that I was glad to see, and it's not official yet, is it looks like the NCAA is going to bump up the 25, the hard cap of 25 signees a year. Because what was happening, it was hurting high school players because a lot of colleges, almost every school is holding back offers. So, like, if typical, not every school can have 25 a year just because of the overall number, but let's just, for argument's sake, every school could sign 25 a year. They were signing 22 a year because you want to leave some scholarships open for transfers. Well, some mid, that's not mid-low major, that's more of a college basketball term, but some smaller G5 schools aren't signing many high school players at all. They're all going to the transfer portal. Texas State, I believe, did not sign a high school player last year. They all transfers.
That's so tough. If you're a parent of a high school senior, you hear that. That's not good, right?
Right, because there's fewer offers going out, and so that's why they're raising the limit up to 7 based on how many transfers you have. So if you have 25, if you were able to sign 25 this year, and you had at least 7 players transfer, you can sign 32 players. So that's good, because what we don't want, and nobody wants this, is to take away opportunities. Full scholarship opportunities for kids out there who could potentially play college football. So to me, that's one of the biggest issues, is just the lack of high school senior, not just the maybe they don't have the ability to go play for the SEC school or the Power 5 schools. It's the trickle-down effect, mm-hmm. where 5 years ago there was X amount of offers going out to high school players, and now there's only 80% of that because schools are just holding back scholarships. And there's also a lot of guys that are we're decent college football players. I don't have the numbers that transferred and never found a home. You know, it's the whole grad.
That's the other thing that I hear a lot from the coaches is take a look. And Darren, you'll remember this. One of our recent conversations with Herm Edwards, he called this before it happened. He said, you watch how many people get left in that transfer portal. They're still sitting there. They have nowhere to go. Nobody offers them a job. In fact, they were telling a story about one of his players. I think it was his kicker. One of his kickers into the Prince. He went into the portal, gave up his scholarship. Nobody took him, so he had to beg his way back on. He had to walk back on to Arizona State. And to his credit, he's won the job. He's back in the mix and playing for them. But it's a tough story. He gave up his scholarship in the process.
Yeah, it's you know, some of these guys, the transfer portal, I'm not going to say the numbers are inflated. They are what they are. But there's a lot of guys that might, you know, graduate from a school and aren't really welcome back, because what a lot of schools will do is, you know, say your scholarship's guaranteed for 4 years. If you graduate and don't really, not into our plans, time to move on. So they could put their name in the transfer portal as a fifth-year senior with 1 year of eligibility. If they find something they like, they might take that, but, you know, they're fine with moving on. I think there's a certain percentage of those guys, too. But there's also those guys that leave after their freshman year, a quarterback, and they're just either not happy and they want to find somewhere else to play, and they realize that, you know, with these schools, they're hitting the schools are so active in the transfer portal, the school sites are set a little bit higher than that kid right there. So it's kind of there's definitely kids that get lost in the shuffle, and they're giving up free scholarships. Everyone has different goals, and all these kids want to go play in the NFL, but it's sort of like once you get that free ride, sometimes you just probably should hold on to it. But that's a whole another topic for another time.
Mitch, real quick on the way out, just because they're in our backyard, I know we don't talk about them much, but there was news here in the last, I don't know, 72 hours or so. Austin Peay is leaving the OVC for ASUN. Well, what does the future look like for the Ohio Valley Conference? Because this is not the first team to leave here recently.
Yeah, I mean, good question. I wouldn't say I was surprised by that, but it's just a someone who follows the local college scene here. It's good to have so many schools, you know, in the OVC, and always enjoy going to the OVC basketball tournament. Don't pretend to be an insider or have that much knowledge on the situation there, but it's, to me, when I think OVC, I think basketball, just because Division I basketball and tournament, obviously the league has football, and they've had some very good football teams over the years, but it's just, it's going to have to, yeah, I don't know what the numbers are right now, if they feel like they need to replace Austin Peay, but it's a program that has some decent potential. I know they've been recruiting very well for the FCS level. Obviously, we know what Will Hewley did there. So it's been an interesting ride for the Governors from dropping football to coming back and being one of the worst teams in the FCS in the country to kind of making national headlines with their turnaround and then now switching leagues.
Yeah. You just wonder if it's going to be around very much longer. Or like you said, yep. Is it just going to be another shuffle and they're going to find some more schools to join their conference? Mitch, always appreciate it. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right, that is Mitch Light from The Athletic. Willie, why don't you tell us about Loan Pronto?
All right, let me do that. Loan Pronto, remember, they want to remind you that your home value is way up. If you're in our listening area, that's one of the benefits you have of a growth area like Nashville and the surrounding areas. Your home value is up. And with mortgage rates back to all-time lows, it creates a great situation to where if you call Loan Pronto and refinance, you can get cash out of your home's equity at a really good rate, and you can reinvest that money back into your home or use it for something you need right now. Maybe it's tuition money, maybe it's a debt consolidation, maybe it's just to pay off some credit cards so you can get back to where you want to be. So take advantage of this opportunity that's there by calling Loan Pronto. They can refinance your loan at a super low rate, pay the closing costs for you, and get you the cash out that you need, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 grand, whatever it might be, depending on your situation. So don't just sit on that home's new value. Use it to your advantage. Loan Pronto's all-digital platform makes it fast and easy, and if you act now, you can even skip your next two house payments. Call Loan Pronto, 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780, or go to loanpronto.com and ask them about that Loan Pronto zero-cost cash out refi. Equal housing lender.
NMLS 1661781. Subject to lender approval. Not all loans eligible for zero cost option.
All right, Elijah, listen up. You can tune into Nashville Sounds Baseball presented by 312 Pizza Company and Farm Bureau Health Plans tomorrow night. Because we're going to be there tomorrow during our show at First Horizon Park. Sounds begin their final home series of this season. They will host Columbus. This is why I want you to listen up. It's Fan Appreciation Week at First Horizon Park, and you can enjoy $5 and $6 beers all week. Grab tickets today at NashvilleSounds.com. Just saying. I don't think we're going to have any tomorrow during the show, but if you are going to a Sounds game this week, it is Fan Appreciation Week, and they've got $5 and $6 beers. So just a heads up.
Are we going to be there while the game's going on? Or do they have an afternoon game tomorrow?
No.
Oh, I was hoping for like a little matinee action. We could multitask, do our show, and catch the game, but apparently not. Okay. Well, be nice to be over at the park, though.
I mean, I don't know that. I just assumed. I don't believe it's a day game. I don't know that for a fact.
Like, well, 100%. Let's check.
Yeah. I don't.
Maybe my dream's still alive.
Could be. That would be really cool. But I don't believe it's the case. What do you make? We have not spent any time because it happened over the weekend when we were off the air on Friday. The announcement: Austin Peay is leaving the OVC and they're going to the A-Sun. What do you make of what's left of the OVC and where's this going?
You are right that tomorrow is a night game. It is against Columbus at 7:05. So okay, my dream is shattered, but that's okay. Five-game homestand for the Sounds. Final one of the year. You know, my first thought was, tell me what the A-Sun Football League looks like down the road. Austin Peay certainly, I guess along with Eastern Kentucky, likes what they see down the road. And I don't know all the ins and outs. I do know just, you know, just from my Predator, you know, role, how excited they are about the new partnership and the new arena they're building out there. That's going to really be a game changer, I think, for their athletic department as a whole, the community as a whole. You know, that doesn't directly affect football, but I think indirectly it has them thinking, you know, with this run that they're on, where they've been really good since Will Healy got the program going. It's like they're looking down the road. And so I don't know. I don't really know. I don't know enough to really be able to tell you why the A-Sun down the road is a better option than the OVC. I mean, do you have a theory?
No, I don't. No, I'm literally asking because I don't know.
I'm with you. I'd like to know more. I'm sure there's a pretty clear-cut vision there, but I just don't have the answers.
But, I mean, is the conference in trouble? I mean, this is now the third team?
The football part of the conference or the conference?
Well, this is the third school to leave.
Football is such a separate thing in leagues like that.
Right.
Like, I didn't, honestly, I will be 100% up front with you. I didn't know the A-Sun had football.
Well, I don't know that they do, to be honest.
Do they have, are they creating football, I guess?
I don't know.
Stetson doesn't have football. Florida Gulf Coast. We know Lipscomb doesn't have football and is never going to have football.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess they, for them to be going there, they have to be going that direction.
I mean, they have to, right? Or does this create an independent situation for football?
Well, Liberty's in there, so we know Liberty.
Okay, but
has
Liberty.
Football. Eastern Kentucky, but
Liberty's
Jacksonville
not playing
State
in the A Sun.
Already,
but
yeah, Liberty
Liberty's
is
not playing
right now. The A Sun, in terms of football, only have Jacksonville State, Kennesaw State, Central Arkansas, Eastern Kentucky, and North Alabama.
Okay, yeah, so you're trying to create a nucleus from those schools, and you're taking like three from the OVC. And
but Eastern Kentucky and Jacksonville State have already Have they left the OVC completely, or just in football?
I believe they already have, because on the A-Sun's website, they have standings right now that include Jacksonville State and Eastern Kentucky.
So we know they have football. We know...
I've seen the Kennesaw State.
Kennesaw State has football.
Yeah, they have a nice little facility there. It's a nice area of town. I guess their vision is down the road. This is a better spot for... for football, and I guess if you have an automatic bid for the league champion to get into the tournament, that's really where success lies. But I don't know what the OVC isn't providing for football. This is another mystery to me. But because I'm with you, I'm with Mitch, and I think you would agree. I like the synergy of having Belmont, Tennessee State, Austin Peay all in the same league. So. You know, Austin Peay now, I guess, will create a rivalry in the other sports with Lipscomb locally.
Yeah. So right now they have five teams in football. Jacksonville State, Kennesaw State, Eastern Kentucky.
I wonder if they have a vision of a few more before it's all over.
Central Arkansas, Northern Alabama, or North Alabama, and now you can add Austin Peay, so that'll be six. So I don't know what is the ultimate goal.
And it certainly affects Lipscomb in their basketball vision down the road. Their travel, the number of teams in their league, the teams that they're playing.
Sure does. All right. It is closing time. That will do it for our show today. Like I said, we'll be at First Horizon Park tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your day. Continue to be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow at 10 a.m. We look forward to talking to you then. We'll see you then.